Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Well, we all share a passion for rural America. That's number one. And we all share a passion for the farmers that serve this country.
Kurt Covington, Senior Director of Partner Relations with Ag America Lending.
And as ag lenders, we kind of view ourselves as being the most important partnership they have on their farm. Now, I know they want to say, well, it's my equipment supplier or, you know, my vendors and my seed supplier. We get that. But I think our relationships with lenders are so critically important because without the capital that we provide them, it's hard for a farm to, obviously, they can't, you know, they wouldn't be able to grow the business, you know, cover their costs. And so having that relationship with the farmers, it's just in my 40-year career, it's just been fantastic. And, you know, I look forward to coming to this convention all the time because we all share the same passion.
This is Agriculture Today.
If the two countries really have reasonable and correct perceptions of each other, good policies will be possible.
Chinese embassy in Washington this week hosting a celebration marking the 45th anniversary of China-U.S. relations. Lin Jingxiao is Chinese international department head.
So there's a tremendous potential for, you know, the largest developed country in the world and the largest developing country in the world. So tremendous potentials as could be seen in our cooperation in the past. So I think the possibility and potentiality are all there. But now I think that it's really up for the United States to develop a kind of perception on China based on good understanding and correct understanding of China's strategic intentions. China does grow and it has the right to grow in strength. And so China will naturally become more powerful in terms of its economy, its military, and many other areas as well. But China's intention is basically to deliver a better life for the Chinese people. So we don't really have any hidden agenda. Overtaking the United States is not our goal. So if we have that in mind, the kind of mutually beneficial cooperation would be possible. And I think I don't really want to name the areas you can talk about: trade, economy, agriculture, law enforcement, even on cooperation in addressing global challenges. And people around the world do have strong expectations on the two countries to work together and other parties in the world to address the global challenges, which is a must for China and the United States.
Can the U.S. rely on journalists to tell the story of what's happening inside China?
China has always been taking a very positive and supportive position on encouraging more foreign journalists to come to China and report and to see China for themselves and report China in a very accurate and objective way. But it's true that we do have differences. Even when journalists come to China, they do see China in a way that is different from our expectations, because we believe that China is like this, but they are portraying China in a different way. And that sometimes creates some difficulties, but that's not the mainstream of things. So China is open not only to the business people, but also to Western and global and international media. But there were some rows between China and the United States in some years before. And, the Chinese media was here in the United States, media organizations were labeled as foreign agents or foreign missions. And that was wrong. So there was kind of row between them, as a kind of a difficult time between the Chinese government and the U.S. government in working together on media. But I hope that could be mended. And also, governing foreign journalists reporting in China, there's also laws and regulations. For example, personally, I was involved in shaping the law in 2008, right after the Olympic Games. And there was a lot of changes from the previous regulations, and really, which really paved the way for a more accessible information in China. But I hope that to this regard, China and the Western media could really work in a more strong cooperative way to make sure that our peoples will understand each other better through the media. So we take a very proactive approach towards that.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This continuing resolution keeps the government open while the appropriations committees in the House and the Senate continue bipartisan negotiations on final 2024 funding bills that are in line with the agreement we have had since last June. I am encouraged by the conversations that have taken place since the top-line numbers were reaffirmed in the Schumer-Johnson agreement, and I appreciate the good faith and the respectful four-corner negotiation that took place to put forward this continuing resolution.
Connecticut Representative Rosa DeLauro.
House Republicans wasted the entire duration of the first continuing resolution and most of the second, arguing over 2024 funding levels they agreed to last summer. However, I believe we have finally moved on from that charade, and there is now a mutual understanding that the only way to finally end the saga of 2024 funding is to write appropriations bills that can earn the support of both Democrats and Republicans in the House and in the Senate.
Texas Representative Chip Roy.
I do rise in opposition to the legislation that was just sent to the United States House of Representatives from the United States Senate. I just spent a good deal of time going around the country, traveling to Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. You might imagine why. Spoke to thousands of Americans. Not one American said, please, Congressman Roy, add more money to the debt. Please, Congressman Roy, keep spending money we don't have. Keep spending deficit spending every year, bankrupting our kids and grandkids. But that is precisely what we're doing yet again. Kicking the can down the road. That's what we do. It's what we do best in this chamber. It's what we do best in Congress. It is why the American people are so frustrated with this town, with the swamp, because it is a swamp that is entirely not drained. We are sitting here doing the same thing again. It is Groundhog Day in the House chamber all the time, every day. Yet again, spending money we don't have. Last year, an agreement was reached with spending levels and caps. Now, I didn't particularly love those levels of caps. A number of us didn't. And there were supposedly some side deals. Does that sound swampy? Side deals. But what was written into the law? What was written into the law was a level that was somewhere around a 1% reduction over last year's enormously bloated omnibus spending level. A 1% cut. So can this body possibly adhere to those caps? No. No, we can't do that. Last year, we tried to fix this place. We tried to do appropriations bills. We passed 10 appropriations bills out of the committee, 7 appropriations bills off the floor. We tried to restore regular order. We had about 1,100 amendments. We tried to process those so the American people could see their chamber working again. But what happened? Everything reverts back to the mean in this town. The same old story. Because a side deal is cut. We have to spend at a higher level, you see. And that's what's going on back and forth between the Senate and the House. So for the American people, they need to understand what's happening. This continuing resolution will fund your government at the same level as last year's massive omnibus spending bill that all my Republican colleagues, all of them, with exception of two in this chamber, were adamantly opposed to, voted against, spoke out against, put press releases out against, campaigned against, and they're going to vote for it right now. They're going to vote to continue to spend at that level.
Measure passed the House 314 to 108, 106 Republicans, 2 Democrats opposed. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The other thing is we got to start watching weather beyond the farm.
Dr. Dave Cole is Professor Emeritus at Virginia Tech.
It's not only the Mississippi, it's the Yangtze, it's the Po River in Italy. Alicia, my associate, just came back. She says she showed me the pictures as they were going over. Folks, it's now weather beyond the fields is going to be critical. Think about that old Mississippi. She's a 6-lane highway down to 2 now. And she's constipated, okay? And you know what Eric's weather guy said the other day? You don't want too much rain too fast, because that means, what, the Midwest just gets what? Plowed with moisture. And you know what the other thing is? Yeah, New Orleans. New Orleans. You don't call it New Orleans. You call it New Orleans. Think about it. You got the brackish salt water coming on up, impacting fresh water. But you know what the other thing is? What's headed north? fertilizer, and all those input components at what cost? Now, it's not only the price side, but it's the input cost side. And this is river transportation beyond your field. But in the Yangtze, same thing is happening there.
There's been talk of recessions now for 4 years. What do they have in common?
And again, I got to tell you, every recession since 1969, except one around the turn of the century, I'm sounding like an old timer here, was caused by energy. And we fell right into Putin's trap, in OPEC's trap, and we didn't need to go there, folks. I'm going to be very blunt about it. Okay? And you know, you remember when 9/11 occurred? I spoke at a class. I was on a program with Dick Vitale the other day. It was his first talk back from cancer. And we were with students at Tennessee Tech. And I mentioned 9/11. And I asked them how many were born after 9/11. It was 97-98% of them. You know, when those two towers went down in New York City, I lost two students in Cantor Fitzgerald. One was an All-American lacrosse player up at Cornell. And when that Pennsylvania, Mike Fierstein, when the plane went down near Somerset, when that Pentagon was hit, you know what we said? We're going to become energy independent in a matter of 25 years, folks. We did it in 10 years. We had a record economic expansion just before the pandemic of 128 consecutive months. Why? Because we were secure in energy. And North American secure because we were number one in energy. Canada was number four. And Mexico was number eight. That was all unraveled. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. And now it's real interesting.
He talks about how business and economic plans are like an autonomous vehicle.
I was in my first driverless car the other day. Oh, yeah, state of Washington, going from Spokane out to Coeur d'Alene. I wasn't driving. And the guy, you know, had his hands out the wheel. I mean, going 70 miles an hour and going, ooh. I go to him. I go, what happens if a deer or a moose runs the road? I don't know. What happens in a snowstorm? Well, I don't know. Folks, this is the way we've been managing our finances and farm in the past. We've been in the driverless what? Financial car. And we start asking these type of questions. But here is the big thing. You've got the Fed pushing down on the brakes. You've got fiscal policy worldwide, whether it was England, whether it's China, whether it's here in the United States, pushing down on the gas. And so what do you got? You've got inconsistencies. And guess what? A lot of people are in the driverless car. They don't know what they don't know. And this is why I totally agree. May not be 23, but watch out, 24 and 25. It could get interesting.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
China actually has been working with the African countries for a long, long time, even during the difficult time of China's economy, like in the 1970s.
China's Belt and Road Initiative, sometimes referred to as the New Silk Road, one of the most ambitious infrastructure projects ever conceived, launched in 2013 by President Xi Jinping. It was a collection of development and investment initiatives devised to link East Asia and Europe through infrastructure.
China was really offering a very useful helping hand to the African people and countries in building. At that time, even you talk about Zambia, and certainly you know about the Tanzania-Zambia railway. So that was when China, even during the time when it was poor itself, we're trying to offer a helping hand.
Speaking this week, while marking the 45th anniversary of China-U.S. relations, Lin Jingxiao, Chinese International Department Head at the Council on Foreign Affairs.
And then when after the China's policy of reform and opening up, we are even working more closely together with African countries. So when you talk about China's economy now is doing well, and we are stronger than we used to be. We were much stronger than we were 10 years ago. So that 10 years ago was the time when China's Belt and Road Initiative was proposed. So we were now today, you know, we are in a very stronger and better position to work with countries that are involved in the Belt and Road Initiative in building the connectivity, infrastructure, well, trade and things. So I think that we are not really exerting any burden on the countries that are involved in the Belt Initiative, and actually China's assistance and China's cooperation with these countries are really warm welcome by these countries. So take, for example, the country where I used to work as a master, you know, in Indonesia. Now we are seeing the launch of the Jakarta-Bandung bullet train. When I was there, it took me 5 hours at midnight to travel from Jakarta to Bandung. Now it took only 40 minutes. So the car, the train is running at 350 kilometers an hour. Yes, a tremendous amount of money was spent on that rail, on that bullet train and on the railway. But as the president put it, the Indonesian president put it, we should not only look at the cost of the railway, but we have to look at the benefits, financial benefits, economic benefits, social benefits. So when we when they have the train in there in place, you know, it means more than just building the railway itself. Because when the railway is not there, what people have in mind that is that, you know, how much money that we're going to spend. But when they have the railway, they're thinking about how much money we're going to make with that railway. So that's the fundamental change of, you know, people's approach towards this kind of connectivity building and infrastructure building. So I think a lot of people are talking about the debt problem of the African countries, and China is not the major contributor to the debt problem in that continent.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This continuing resolution keeps the government open while the appropriations committees in the House and Senate continue bipartisan negotiations on the final 2024 funding bills.
More fireworks on Capitol Hill on Thursday as the House considers another continuing resolution. Rosa DeLauro is a Democrat and former member of the House Ag Committee from Connecticut.
That are in line with the agreement that we have had since last June. And I am so encouraged by the conversations that have taken place since the top line numbers were reaffirmed. And I appreciate the good faith and respectful four-corner negotiation that took place to put forward this continuing resolution. My hope is that the current pace and tone will result in swiftly finalizing all of the 2024 funding bills in a bipartisan fashion, because that is what we are here to do. That is our job, to govern. That is what the American people expect of us. Some of my colleagues would see that this government would shut down and don't care how hurtful that would be.
Texas Representative Chip Roy has been an outspoken critic of continuing resolutions.
They're going to vote to continue to fund the radical progressive policies embedded in it. Continue to fund the bureaucracy that's a war of the American people. Continue to fund open borders. Continue to fund Alejandro Mayorkas. Even as we attempt to impeach him in the Homeland Security Committee, we're going to fund him. We're going to fund those open borders. We're going to fund the United Nations. We're going to fund the World Health Organization. We're going to fund UNRWA to give money to the Palestinians that gets to Hamas. And we're going to go campaign against those things, but we're going to fund them. And my Democratic colleagues want to hide behind side deals rather than adhere to the agreed-upon caps that would at least modestly reduce spending by 1%. That's what's happening in this chamber. And we're going to do this CR in order to buy time to cut a deal that will increase spending. That will increase spending past the caps in order to honor side deals and to actually increase the funding for a federal government that is at war with the people that I represent. That is shameful. Under no circumstances should we vote for that. Under no circumstances is this something that we should be supporting. We should stay here and do our work. But instead, people said, why can't you give the time back, Congressman Roy, so we can go catch our planes before the snowstorm gets in? I'm sorry. I think maybe we should stay here and do our job and actually find a way to cut spending like we campaign on over and over again.
Roy calls out Democrats and even members of his own party, saying they say one thing on the campaign trail.
Everybody in this country expects us to do our job, and yet we continually fail to do it. We continue to spend money we don't have, undermining our own national security and our own well-being, funding a bureaucracy that's at war with the people that we represent. At some point, we ought to actually do what we campaign on. At some point on both sides of the aisle, we should actually recognize that the American people expect in a republic for the representatives that they send to the United States House of Representatives to actually represent them.
And it's why a 2024 farm bill is not a given. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
This is why we're going to have a lot of inconsistency. You take Ukraine, Russia, takes you 13 hours to go east-west, 15 hours to go north-south. Hey, she's one of the 10 breadbaskets of the world. You can see, you know, the various things.
Dr. Dave Cole is professor emeritus at Virginia Tech.
But can I tell you another little thing that gets my goat? It's this. You know all that oil? She went to China and she went to India. India's economy has done very well because they were, what, off 40 buck barrel oil on the backs of us. You know what the other element is? As I mentioned, this potash and nitrogen and all the other elements, this is a 1 to 5 year disruption. 1 to 5 years of disruption. But you know what the good managers are going to do? They're going to have a very proactive plan. They're going to capitalize on it. You know what your others are going to do? They're going to struggle. They aren't going to go out of business necessarily. But you know what you'll be doing? The five C's of lending. Collateral, 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 collateral with them. The others, you know what you're going to have to judge? It's a famous term Danny Everson came up with. I still use it. It's the other C of credit called a cranium. It's called intellectual collateral. And do they have the intellectual collateral? That group is going to put profits on the table.
He explains how your ground can shift rapidly.
You talk about technology. How'd you like to be in Germany, the fourth largest economy in the world? Well, they're not the fourth largest economy in the world. Gavin Newsom says he is. All right. Now, what's real interesting, a lot of the technology. Anybody from California in here? I'm sorry. Okay. Hey, I'm not political. I'm like Archie Bunker anymore, you know? I'm not going to be politically correct, just tell it like it is. But one of the things that I'll tell you, take Germany, about 50% of their components in technology comes from Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera. And see Germany's problem? And see Europe's problem that's impacting us here in the United States? They got, what? Mesmerized by cheap energy out of Russia. Plus, who was their biggest customer? China. And so this is why you see the Chancellor of Germany over with President Xi. He knows how critical that is. So we're going to see disruption there.
And on the idea of nationalization.
You know what the other thing we're going to have to really watch is food nationalism. Give me an example. Dry weather. Dry weather in India. You know what India decided to do? No wheat to the Philippines and Indonesia. Look what Malaysia did with palm oil. Look what happened in Sri Lanka. All of a sudden, the leader came in, flipped the switch, no commercial fertilizer. Now people are what? Starving. And one of the things, you got 50 countries dependent on Russia and Ukraine for more than 30% of its imported wheat. But look at Turkey. Turkey's inflation rate now is 83%. Part of the reason why Turkey's working real close with Russia because they want to cool that one down. But I want you to watch it this fall and this winter. Putin's strategy is basically to wear the West down. In other words, he wants to crack NATO. And he started out with Germany. Now he's working on France and Italy. And one of the things he's trying to crack them, not militarily, but economically. And so this is going to be one that you'll watch kind of play out here. But you notice what's starting to happen? Social unrest. And so it's real interesting when people, the positive about agriculture is when people go hungry and we don't have energy, you get a little bit upset.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
What is considered rural and urban in the eyes of the people that are given these grants? Can you tell us that?
Senator Tommy Tuberville with Deputy Secretary Social Torres Small.
For community facilities, it's 20,000, unless they're rural in character. Or if it's a community facility guaranteed, it's 50,000, but there are some exceptions if they're connected to a municipal area. In ReConnect, there's a different definition. And one of the things that we've done in ReConnect is try to balance density of a population with sometimes the distance that you might have to travel if you're a really remote area. So maybe it's a slightly denser community, but it's a long way to a city with over 50,000 people. So there's a lot of complexity. And then you wade into how do we make sure it's also really understandable for folks who are trying to apply for this. So happy to provide any technical assistance we can, recognizing that so many of the definitions of rural are statute.